A line expands into TV static. White letters appear. HBO, a circle inside the O. Title, Coastal Elites. Text appears. Five heart-tugging monologues. Crossed out. Five unhinged rants. Crossed out. Five desperate confessions from people coping with the new abnormal. The word barely appears before coping.
We will make America great again.
I'm a very stable genius.
You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab him by the pussy.
Nobody respects women more than Donald Trump. That I can.
I know more about ISIS than the generals do, believe me. Dr. Fauci's made some mistakes.
Supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, just very powerful light, right? And then I see the disinfectant.
Why are African Americans still dying at the hands of law enforcement in this country?
And so are white people. More white people, by the way.
Are you suggesting that you might not accept the results of the election?
I have to see. I'm not going to just say yes.
Text appears. Lock her up. January. On an interrogation video, Miriam Nessler.
Yes, officer, I know what I did, and I know why that man pressed charges. Oh, my God. I can't believe I'm here. I've never been in a police station in my life.
She looks around the room.
Wallpaper would help. What was that? Do I want a lawyer? You mean my son? What did you say? Your son is a doctor? It's not a competition. What kind of a doctor? Oh, a pediatrician. Oh, that's wonderful. My daughter's a neurologist. What? Your daughter's a cardiac surgeon and she's been published? Fuck you. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that. I really didn't. Please, please just listen. Let me speak so you'll understand. Because this morning I wake up and I'm reading the Times because I love the Times. Like it was my child or it was my parent. I mean, officer, do you know what the New York Times means to a liberal Jewish woman like me? On the census, when it asks for religion, I don't put Jewish, I put the New York Times. So I pick up the Times, which I have delivered. The real Times, the newsprint Times. Yeah, yes, I know I'm old-fashioned, but really, officer, please. Reading the Times online is like having sex with a robot. Yeah, I mean, it's cleaner and it's faster, but you can tell the difference. Okay, I'll just say it. The New York Times online is the New York Times for the Gentiles. I mean, have you ever had dinner with a Lutheran family? That's not food. But by the way, officer, are you Jewish? Oh, you're Catholic. That's fine. And I'm the one being arrested. I'm kidding. So I pick up the paper. See, there's a reason it's called the paper. Only there he is, his face above the fold. Him. You know who I'm talking about. I can't even stand to say his name. Because I'm a New Yorker, and we always hated him. And it wasn't just the lying and the hair and the ugly buildings. Oh, my God. He has no style. He has no sense of humor. He tore down Bonwit Teller in the middle of the night. He wouldn't rent to black people. Move to the Kremlin, you son of a bitch.
She leans her face against her hand.
I didn't say that. But yes, I did. And that's part of the problem. I hate being like this. I mean, even years ago when I had no money and I was waitressing and I was going to City College and my parents kept nagging me to get married and we had Nixon and Roy Cohn and whoever the fuck invented pantyhose. I mean, I never felt like this. I never went to bed in a rage and woke up having a panic attack. I didn't spend every day in anger and dread and I didn't hate those other people. Those people from Nebraska and Ohio and Alabama. I mean, I'd fly over them, but I'd wave. And when they came to New York City to visit, I'd give them directions to Lion King. I mean, I'd start to recommend the new Sondheim. They say, who's Sondheim? I'd say, have fun with the puppets. I mean, maybe we weren't buddies, but we didn't despise each other. That's what he did. Oh, God. I'm doing it. The fury, the agita. The constant need to shake my copy of the New York Times and scream at it. How could you let this happen?
She lies the paper down and smooths it.
not the art section. You know, sometimes I worry that maybe I'm a little too attached to the times, like maybe it was my best friend or something, or like when my late husband Nick was still alive, and we used to spend all day Sunday in bed with the Times, and cinnamon and raisin bagels and lox, and you know what we call that? We call it a Jewish orgy. But there's his face, and it's such an insult to the Times and to Nick, who hated him more than anybody. I can't talk about Nick, though. No, not now. Maybe not ever. So I take a shower, and then I turn on the Today Show, because I love those co-hosts, Savannah and Hoda. I just love them. They're so smart. They're so upbeat. It's like they're always saying, hey, there's been a plane crash and a tsunami, but we're both wearing sleeveless dresses, so mazel tov. Only today, and I can tell they're not enjoying it, they're doing a report on the daughter's Goodwill World Tour. The daughter. She's always laughing and smiling. She wears more makeup than the Rockettes combined. And I don't know what the fuck she's doing in the White House. I mean, will you tell me? She wasn't elected. And before that, she had Chinese sweatshops churning out that crappy jewelry of hers while her dad jabbered on about American jobs. And when 12 women were brave enough to come forward and say that he had assaulted them, she says, I believe my father. And then, when the tape comes out, where he talks about grabbing women by the pussy, she says, that's not the man I know. Well, let me introduce you, sweetheart.
She grabs her glasses.
And I'm not going to say a word about her marriage, because that's her personal life. Even if she chose to marry a rich boy who looks like Celine Dion's sad niece. You know, she went after him, but he said no. No, not unless she converted. So she meets with a rabbi, and overnight, alakazam, sis, boom, bah, she's suddenly Jewish. Like it's a L'Oreal product. Oh, God. Enough. I'm sorry. I'm really tired of it. We're all so tired of it. So today...
She sets her glasses down.
As a diversion, as an antidote, I decide I'm going to enjoy New York City. What? Oh, I'm retired. After 45 years as a teacher in the Queens public school system, did I mention I'm Jewish? And I loved it. All those children. They gave me so much hope, such happiness. Because teaching a child to read, you think, now that child has a chance. And not just a chance to go to college and get a good job, but a chance to learn to love reading, to be curious, to discover the whole world. Maybe even the theater. You like the theater? Oh, you love Phantom? So that's a no. I'm kidding. Well, anyway, today I have a ticket for a matinee at the Public. And I have some time, so I go to the Starbucks down the block. And I'm sitting by myself, sipping my latte, reading the business section, which I brought in my NPR tote bag. Don't you do it, officer. Don't you mock my tote bag. Because, officer, you want to know a secret? That's how we recognize each other. Women like me. It's a secret code. NPR. The New Yorker.
She looks left and right.
The Estee Lauder tote bag is a gift with purchase with the Barnes & Noble Virginia Woolf Centennial tote bag. Fold it up inside.
She puts her finger over her lips.
Then I see him. Two tables away, he's about 40. He's wearing jeans and a windbreaker and the hat. The red hat. You know the one. The MAGA hat. The Make America Great Again hat. In New York City. In the East Village. Two blocks from the Public Theater and Cooper Union, where Lincoln spoke and Larry Kramer. It's like me going to Nebraska, wearing a yarmulke, waving a rainbow flag while reading a book. And I apologize to Nebraska. I'm sure they're very lovely people there, but you know their state bird is a meadowlark. They shot it. And at first I think, Miriam, don't do it. Oh, God, Miriam, don't do it. Don't take the bait. But then I think maybe he's a psychology student and it's an experiment. And then I think, nah, it's a performance piece. Because in the East Village, you never know. I once saw a naked man standing on a street corner, screaming obscenities at a Cabbage Patch doll. Two Obies and a drama desk.
She shrugs.
But then it happens. He's reading the paper. Not the Times. Something conservative. And he says, and not under his breath, right out loud, he says, lock her up. And he looks all around. At the students, at the tourists, and me. He looks right at me. He says it again. Lock her up. That stupid bitch, Hillary, right? She should be in jail. Okay.
She raises her arms.
Hillary.
She clasps her hands.
I know she's not perfect. She can be a little chilly, a little pleased with herself sometimes, but to me, she's the New York Times in a pantsuit. I love her. She's my generation. She wanted to make a difference, so she tried everything. She pushed, she fought, she kept her eyes on the prize.
She gestures up with a fist.
She lost.
She shakes her head.
She won by 3 million votes. But she lost. Because the Electoral College is a white Republican man who says, not so fast, little lady.
She holds out a palm. She looks at her hands and twiddles her thumbs.
Okay, I feel... I really need to ask you a question. Are you a Republican? Be honest. Oh, thank God. Because then I'd have to gouge out your heart with my house keys. I'm kidding. No, I'm not.
She covers her mouth and clenches her fist.
If you want to know what it means to be a woman in America, you just take a look at Hillary. While her husband got to be charming and handsome, slept with everything that moved, she had to grit her teeth in public. And no matter what she did or said or wore, she was attacked. Too smart, too opinionated, too blonde, not blonde enough. And maybe people were right about her, maybe. Maybe she was too compromised. I never saw it. Maybe she wanted it too nakedly. And they wanted to punish her for that. As for me, I'm only going to say this. She mattered to me. She was a woman who tried her best. And the whole world said, fuck you! I don't know what's happening to me. I never used to talk like this. This language is so offensive. And yet, since the election, I haven't been able to stop cursing. The other day, I bought another tote bag. It said bed, bath, and fuck you. So I'm at Starbucks, and I stand up, and I walk over, and I say to the guy.
She puts her hands on her hips.
So, the hat. Why are you wearing it? And he looks me up and down. And he smirks. And I know I shouldn't be judging, but show me one person who voted for that man who doesn't smirk. And he says, I'm wearing it because it drives you fucking nuts. And I think to myself, well, he's not wrong. And then I say, but why do you want to drive me fucking nuts? And I say it clearly. I ask the question so the, you repulsive piece of racist shit, is silent. And he says, because you got Obama, what did we get?
She throws her hands up, then rests her chin on them.
And I just have to stop and think because I have no idea what he's talking about. So I say to him, but what did you want that Obama didn't give you or try to give you? Healthcare? A good job, a decent place to live. Did you want to feel like people were listening to you? He says, "Nah, what? Yeah, whatever. Sure, but mostly."
She points.
Mostly, he says. I look at people like you. in your nice clothes and your bachelor's degree, your fancy coffee, your New York fucking Times. And I think, fuck you. You're not better than me. And do you know what it took for me not to say? Master's degree. But I don't. I suck it up. And I say, but I'm not better than you. Because we're all created equal. And I would fight to the death for your right to wear that hat. And he smirks. And he's laughing. And he says, ha! And that's why you're fucked. You did it to yourself. And that's why we won. Because we don't care. And now my breathing is getting choppy. And he sees that and he's really happy because he knows he's getting to be. I'm taking the bait. And then he says, and you know what else? Hillary was never going to win because no matter what your husband told you to shut you up, he hated that bitch just like every other guy in the world and most of the women too. I dare you. Ask him.
She closes her eyes.
And then I just stop.
She raises both palms, fingers splayed.
And I don't want to. I'm fighting it with everything that's in me. But I remember. My Nick. My husband Nick. Who marched. Who signed every petition. Who taught phys ed. My husband Nick. Who got cancer. But who stayed glued to the television. Who gets so angry that I knew it must be affecting his health, so I made him turn it off. My Nick, who was in so much pain and on so much morphine that he lapsed into a coma. And when he finally came out of it, it was after the election, he looks up at me and he says, she won. She won, right? And I wasn't going to tell him, but the nurse, she didn't know any better. She was just a kid. She said, no. And she said that name. She said the name, that man's name. And Nick, oh my God, Nick's eyes got so wide. He started choking, clenching his fist, trying to sit up, and then...
She shakes her head.
Then he was gone. And that's what I'll never forgive. That man. That smug criminal. Hateful man who uses Metamucil for makeup. That man killed my husband. That man made a liberal Jewish gym teacher explode. So when that guy at Starbucks, when that guy says, Nick hated Hillary, I snapped. I lost it. I went full on Worldwide Wrestling Federation, Navy SEAL, Jason Bourne, go ahead. I grab that hat. I'm going to throw it on the ground. And he grabs my arm and he's twisting it. He says, that's my hat, bitch. I said, not today, asshole. And I yank my arm away, but I keep the hat and I run right out of Starbucks down the street. He's chasing me for two city blocks. Thank you, Dr. Scholl's air cushioned insults. And I tear up the stairs like a fucking mountain climber. My heart is pounding. I'm operating on pure adrenaline. And he's yelling, give it back, and I say, this is the New York Public Theater, the home of Hamilton and Shakespeare in the Park, and a chorus line, you have no power here, and he says, the fuck I don't, and he grabs the hat and he shoves me with both hands like he wants to kill me, and I lose my balance and I'm on the floor, on my back, and he leaves. And he's laughing. And now everyone is all gathered around. Oh, my God, are you all right? Are you all right? Do you have a concussion? What'll we do? Should we call 911? And I just don't know what to say.
She rests her head in her hands.
I got a bump on my head. I've twisted my ankle, but I don't even care. Because I'm looking around, see? And I say to myself, what am I doing here? Why am I trying to see a play and learn about the world and keep up with things? What good does it do? Who does it help? And that was the moment when...
She waves a hand.
I can't say it. I can't say it. It's blasphemy. It's unthinkable. No, you know what? I'm going to tell you because you really will understand. That was the moment when I almost canceled my subscription to the public theater.
She nods.
Do I shock you? But it's true. I had looked into the abyss.
She nods.
I said no more. No more five-hour plays where people in nice apartments debate socialism. No more musicals about Joan of Arc as she was fighting the Taliban. Because everything, my whole life, my whole image of myself as a decent, cultured, curious human being, why, it was just a bad joke.
She shrugs.
Cliché, fake news. And then this young woman comes over. She's wearing overalls and a pink pussy hat and a ring in her nose and not on the side either. We're talking the full Ferdinand. I mean, it's a look my mother would say, did you have to wear that to our Seder? And she says her name is Heliotrope. And she's the house manager. And she's seen what just happened. She brings me some water and a $10 brownie. She says, go see the play. You'll feel better. And I said, but won't the play just blame all the world's problems on gentrification and inequality and the patriarchy with full frontal nudity? She says, what do you got against nudity? I said,
she shakes her head.
Nothing. But it's always the wrong people. But I thought about it. Because I knew I had a choice. To see the play or surrender. To have some guts or give up. And I looked at Heliotrope. And I said,
she closes her eyes.
I bet your real name is Helen. But she was young. She had hope. And then I thought about Nick and everything he was so passionate about. And I looked around at all the other theatergoers. And I thought,
she nods.
Every ticket is a weapon. Fighting that guy, fighting that bastard, and fighting all the bastards. And then I thought, Miriam of Arc. That's who I am. Joan of Arc. I'm Miriam of Arc. Because I stand for something. And everyone in this lobby, we all stand for something. And everything that man is afraid of, everything he doesn't understand, everything he hates. So I got to my feet, brushed myself off, put on some lipstick, and I said, fuck you, Mr. MAGA hat dickwad, I'm going to see a play. And when I get out, there you are, officer. Because that guy filed a complaint. Because I threatened him, which I did, and which I would do again. In a heartbeat. We want our country back. And we are going to march and sign petitions and register people to vote. And we are going to watch Norwegian detective shows on HBO because that's what we do. We fight. We tweet. Some of us even TikTok, whatever the fuck that is. So take a good look at me, officer. Remember my face and my drugstore reading glasses?
She waves the glasses.
And my spirit. Because I'm the wall.
She holds out her wrists.
Lock me up.
That institution that forms the backbone of our society, traditional marriage. It wasn't our idea, it was God's idea.
Text appears. Super gay. March. A curly-haired man talks to a webcam.
Hi, Dr. Morton.
The man waves.
It's Mark Hesterman. Thank you so much for seeing me. Yeah, my regular therapist, Dr. Barrett, he's recovering, thank God, but he still has a fever and chills, and the coughing was getting to me. So I'm so sorry, by the way, to have taken you away from your friend's drive-by baby shower. That sounds so sweet. And I would love to have a baby at some point. Ish. It's just, I have been feeling kind of stuck lately, and I think I might need to just talk this out, otherwise my brain might short circuit. So, here's what's going on. I'm an actor.
Mark nods and raises his eyebrows.
Have you seen me in anything? Well, I played a crusading gay congressional intern in that ABC series Halls of Power, which lasted a season but won a Peabody. And I played a rookie gay firefighter in Showtime's edgier five-alarm Hangover, although I died in the third episode after sacrificing my own life to save a Klan member from a burning church, for which I was nominated for a Queer Spirit Award, which I know sounds sort of like a ghost story on Bravo. And I played a quirky gay tech guru on HBO's Early Adopters with a six-episode arc, although they might be bringing me back.
He nods.
I mean, people on Game of Thrones get eaten by dragons and they come back, so. And I just booked a commercial where my boyfriend and I go on a picnic because we both have health insurance. So, and I mostly play gay roles, and I'm totally grateful for that because the huge majority of actors are unemployed. And, you know, I'm all for queer representation. Yes, sometimes I say gay, and sometimes I say queer, and sometimes I just show people a picture of myself on Halloween in high school dressed as Julianne Moore in The Hours. And I love being gay. You know, which is sort of why I'm here, because for the past 3 weeks leading up to this shutdown, I had been auditioning over and over again for what could be a breakthrough role.
He nods.
Not just for me, but kind of for the entire world. Because the character's name is Fusion, and he would be the first big screen summer blockbuster studio tentpole openly gay superhero. Exactly. So I have just been sitting here. I'm supposed to hear from my agents and manager. They're supposed to call me or text me or something because even though everyone's working from home, apparently the studio is making their final decision today. And I know this is probably sounding like very self-absorbed.
He shakes his head.
But it's a lot deeper than that because when I was younger, I used to search every movie and TV show for even the tiniest hints of gayness. And yes, I had my so-called life for a season, which is why I think I love comic books so much because there are just so many queer characters. You know, that there's Iceman, who used to be straight until he accepted himself as gay, and Green Lantern is gay in a parallel universe, and Coagula is this incredible trans woman who can coagulate liquids and dissolve solids, and I love Josiah Power, who is not only gay and black with super strength, but is also the foremost lawyer in Metropolis, and one of my favorites is Northstar, who's this Canadian Olympic skier with super speed and the ability to create these photonic energy blasts. And they have killed him off like at least three separate times, and he keeps getting resurrected until recently where he was recruited by the X-Men at Xavier Academy, where he now teaches business, economics, and French. And there are so many more. And they're all so smart and interesting and complicated, which is probably why I don't see them in the movies. And then there's Fusion, who is this young gay orphan who was raised in a string of abusive foster homes, and everybody bullied him, and worse. And one day he goes to lie down on the railroad tracks to kill himself when he is simultaneously run over by a train, struck by lightning, hit by a piece of radioactive asteroid, and his phone explodes. And all of those different forms of energy fuse to form his superpowers. And he travels the world using those powers to fight racists, sexists, and homophobes.
He raises his hands.
Find me a better superhero. Find me a better part. And I know this is sounding so LA, but I really want this part. I could act the shit out of this part, because if you, you know, include community theater, three emotionally unavailable ex-boyfriends, and an uncanny ability to predict Golden Globe nominees, he and I are not that different.
He fixes his glasses. He raises his eyebrows.
Yes. Well, the audition, which is why we're here. Okay, so not even that long ago, my being gay would be a secret and I'd be miserable. But there has been progress, thank God, and I am now out and proud. And I get to meet out and proud casting directors at out and proud fundraisers, and I then get to audition for those same out and proud casting directors who then tell my agents I'm too niche.
He nods.
Or emotional. Or sophisticated. Or whatever the current codes are for being just a little too out and proud.
He nods.
Which is why fusion is so important, because originally they were going to cast a straight actor until, thanks to the internet and millions of fusion fans from the comic books, everyone said, no way. And then they were going to hire a closeted actor, like that was some sort of compromise, but people said, no, fusion can't bring his mom to the Oscars because he's not the gay best friend. Or the quirky gay sidekick. He is the lead of the movie. He is part of the Victory League, along with Power Blaster, Deathstalker, Tornado, Blue Ultra, and Bobcat. All of which admittedly sound like minivans, but they are being played by A-list straight actors.
He nods.
And one of them is African American, thank you, Black Panther. And one of them's Korean American, thank you, Crazy Rich Asians. And one of them's Scarlett Johansson, thank you, Scarlett's agent. And I would be the gay one.
He smiles and leans back.
And maybe it's Hollywood genuinely trying to be inclusive, or maybe they're just doing it to be trendy, but okay. Because in most movies, the gay character falls in love and dies. Or falls in love and his partner dies. Or falls in love and experiences approximately 30 seconds of happiness before the end credits. But this time, just maybe, the gay character could fall in love and fucking fly.
He leans back with his hands behind his neck.
So they send me the script, and I decide to play it safe, you know, just straightforward, wholesome, pure all-American superhero who has just faced off against the evil Valdor. So I pop a beta blocker, and I walk into the room, and I give them what they want.
He removes his glasses. He rests his right arm on his chair and stares off, brow furrowed. He shakes his head.
Don't worry, Susie. Valdor can't hurt you. Not now. Not anymore. Not without his head.
He mimics holding Valdor's head.
And Susie, I want you to meet my husband. This is Cortex.
He bites his lip.
Oh, no, he's right here. He's just invisible. He is also a superhero.
He nods. He raises his eyebrows.
Yes, he is entirely faithful. But more importantly, the world has been saved by all different types of superheroes.
He puts on his glasses.
And I say thank you, and I leave, wondering if any of the other superheroes were asked about their partner's fidelity by a 5-year-old girl. And I know I wasn't totally dropped in, but I thought maybe that's what they wanted. And so a week goes by, and I finally hear from my agent, and they want to see me again. So I go back in, and immediately the director tells me to forget about the script. Just go for it. Improvise. Be out there, be beyond out there, because we don't want to play it safe with fusion. So just be super gay.
He rests his right arm on his chair. He raises his eyebrows and nods.
Super gay. So I ask if I could have a moment just out in the hall. And my first impulse is, do not do this. Because whatever you're going to do in there...
He shakes his head.
You won't own. Because you're not celebrating your queerness. That's not what this is. Because it's being demanded of you by a straight executive who wants a cartoon. And I wouldn't do that.
He nods. He bites his lip.
But I'm there. At the callback. And it's fusion, and it's opportunity. And I panic, and I go back in. I go back in.
He smiles.
Partly because I didn't know what else to do, and partly because I was scared of letting them down.
He rubs his temples.
And I did what they asked.
He nods. He removes his glasses. He rests his right arm on his chair and stares off.
Don't worry, Susie. Baldur can't hurt you, not anymore. Not without his head. Looks like someone needed a haircut. Oh, and Susie, I want you to meet my husband, Cortex. He's invisible, which means that he can do whatever or whomever he wants.
He grins.
And as for Valdor, he might have thought that the entire planet was terrified of him, but his only real superpower was the ability to end a pool party just by showing up. Sweetie.
He moves his head left and right and smirks. He licks his lips. He bites his lip and closes his eyes. He puts on his glasses.
And I say thank you, and I leave. And I get to my car, and I start to sob. And at first, I don't even know why. You know, the tears are flowing, and I'm trying to detangle my feelings. Like, am I crying because the whole thing is just so fucking cliche? Or am I crying because I was just asked to parade all of the magic that I love about myself in front of a room full of strangers, like I was some sort of carnival sideshow act? And then my phone rings. It's my agent. They loved it. Don't change a thing. They want to see you tomorrow. You're still in the mix. So I go home to clear my head, and I turn on the TV to just distract myself for a second, but I can't. Because he is there. The Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence. And he's on the news giving a speech at an army base in Missouri about a mile from where I was born. And this is the same Mike Pence that thought that gay marriage would cause societal collapse.
He nods.
Mike Pence, who campaigned for a constitutional amendment to ban marriage equality because it's not, and I'm quoting him on this, God's idea. And who wanted to ban gay adoption and gays in the military and thought the Matthew Shepard hate crimes bill was a radical social agenda. Mike Pence, whose wife, whom he calls mother...
He raises his eyebrows.
...teaches at a school that doesn't just expel gay kids. It expels any kid with a gay relative. And she teaches art.
He looks off.
And here I am, sitting on my couch, having just exploited all of the most charming parts of myself for a job I might not even get.
He rubs his temples.
But I agree to go back in.
He nods. His eyes shift and he smiles.
And I go in the next day, and I haven't looked at the script because at this point, the whole world, just everything feels so absurd. And I say hello to the people in their cashmere and Converse. And I start the scene, except I don't do the scene that they asked me to prepare. I picked one from earlier in the movie before I had caught the bad guy. But at this point, just the sight of them all sitting there was so disorienting that I forgot the lines, but just... decided to go ahead with it anyway.
He bites his lip. He removes his glasses. He rests his right arm in his chair and stares off.
The reason the world's in danger, Susie, is because Valdor is still out there. And Valdor doesn't believe in queer superheroes.
He nods.
He doesn't think we exist.
He looks in the webcam.
Isn't that right, Valdor? Just think we're what? Sight gags or punchlines, just people you could have prance around for your entertainment?
He nods.
And we could agree to disagree that you think it's okay for doctors and nurses to legally deny life-saving health care to gay people, even in an emergency room, even during a global pandemic, because of what you call personal beliefs.
He looks off and shakes his head.
But I'm here with my friends, Victory League. And you have no idea what you're up against.
He raises his eyebrows and nods. He purses his lips, looking off. He puts on his glasses.
And I say thank you, and I leave, and then I think, what the hell did I just do? What did I do?
He holds up his right hand in a loose fist.
But whatever it was,
he points,
that was fusion. That was someone that I could be proud of.
He nods.
And it turns out that they admired my bravery, and I'm still in the mix.
He leans back.
My father not only has the strength and ability necessary to be our next president, but also the kindness and compassion.
Text appears. The blonde cloud. June.
Nina, were you marching?
On a webcam.
Yeah, I was in Union Square, but I came home so I could expedite bail money across the country and start a legal team, but that's not why I'm calling. I have to talk to you. I'm shaking. I'm terrified. Nope, it's not COVID. It's something else, and you're the only person who's going to get this because, okay, bear with me, because I knew her. Not well, but she was a year ahead of us in boarding school. Do you remember? But we would nod at each other, and she always made a point of remembering my name and smiling and saying, hi, Callie. And I'd say, hi, Ivanka. And she had this voice, you know, sort of light and feathery, like a lot of the girls at the time, which was fine. But I remember thinking, is that your real voice? Is that anyone's real voice? I know I'm terrible, but... you know, she really was very nice and very sweet. She would get there in September in a limo, in the back seat, all by herself. And at first I thought she was a floral arrangement. And she had friends, but she was more sort of this floating presence, you know, like a visiting princess. I remember discussing her with you and Melisande, and we all agreed not to blame her for anything her family did. Because it was like you said, we have to treat her as if she was Susan Noriega or Courtney Stalin. It's not her fault. You said that. And I would watch her. And this one time, we were both in the library, and she was watching something about 9/11. And she turned to me, and she said, it's all so awful. And I knew she meant it, but it was so strange because she smiled. And it was like she had this natural instinct to make things better or nicer or prettier. And I know that that's a rich white girl thing and it's how she was raised, which was probably scary. But then I figured out what was really going on because it was something the rest of us didn't have to deal with.
Callie bites her lip.
She was practicing being photographed for the tabloids. And this was pre-Instagram, right? But it was like she knew. She saw it coming. She was like the Steve Jobs of smiling. That was not mean. I mean, because she really was. She was so sweet. And, you know, she tried all sorts of things, modeling and business school and sweatshops. And, of course, working for her dad. But come on. It was an opportunity. I mean, I work for my dad. I run the foundation, which, yes, it's different from making guest appearances on The Apprentice. Did you ever watch that show?
She bites her lip.
Because her dad would fire people, and then she would try to make things better. The smile. It was like she was saying, I'm here, but I'm not. I'm part of this, but I'm somewhere else. I'm smiling. And then it happened. the White House, the move to Georgetown, the shitstorm, and... Okay, get ready, because you're sitting down, you got a glass of wine, a whole bottle, a whole case, because this is where I come in.
She grabs a glass of wine.
Because a few months ago, before quarantine, before everything, I get a call from my dad. Because Trump has invited my dad to the White House. Because I guess Trump knows my dad because he started the most successful black-owned brokerage firm in history. And so I say, Dad, but you're not going, are you? And he says, yes. He says, I'm curious, and you're coming with me.
She leans back.
And I say, no, I'm not. There's no way in hell. And he says, Callie, listen to me. He's the president. We have access. No one will know. And you could learn something. So we fly to Washington. Yes, private. And the car pulls up to the gates, and I wonder, are they going to stop us? I mean, black people at the Trump White House who aren't Kanye? And for a second, I have this image of us being dragged out of the car and arrested, which would already be bad, but then people would also know we were there. But the Secret Service guy just nods, and we drive through. And
she raises her eyebrows.
When I walk into the actual building, I get a shiver because I can't do this. You know, this is our house. It's supposed to be everybody's house. It was built by slaves. And yes, Nina, I know, Barack, but I was there and I am freaking out. And my dad whispers, he says, it's okay, you're gonna be okay, enemy territory. And an aide comes and guides us to the Red Room where the dinner's being held. And when we get to the room, I feel something else. An echo, because there aren't many tables or other guests, and the lighting is bad, so the whole place feels a little abandoned, like a bankrupt casino, like the eyes on the portraits are gonna move. And of course, we're the only people of any color whatsoever, and the only way I can be there is to feel like a spy, you know, like I'm working undercover. Like a resistance fighter dressed as a Nazi in a Tarantino movie, which is exactly what it's like, because then there she is, Melania. And oh, yes, oh my God, nothing moves. Even her hair has Botox. It's like she's Dracula with a blowout and a spray tan. And she's a birther, so fuck her. Then he comes in, Trump. And I have to tell myself, remember what my dad said, you can learn something. So I pretend I don't know anything about him.
She shrugs.
What do I think? Nice guy, friendly, works hard. No, so creepy, so disgusting. I want to run. I want to take a shower. I mean, someone needs to follow him with a dustbuster. And he finally glances up from his phone and he sees me. And I think I get the look, the rich white guy look, which is all about, am I pretty enough? Am I showing enough skin? Am I good enough to fuck? Maybe once. But before he can decide, he sees that I'm with my dad and he comes right over. And he's grabbing my dad's hand and he's calling him Jacko. And then it hits me. Because my dad is rich, seriously rich, richer than Trump will ever be, that's the real turn on. And even if I was a naked porn star, he'd rather fuck my dad. Hold on, wait, okay, get ready. Because just as my dad is introducing me, I hear, Callie. And it's her. And the whole scene is so bizarre because the place feels empty, but the guests are all looking up and it's like this happy blonde four-year-old has scampered into the haunted mansion and she's wearing all white and she glides right over to me and she gives me the perfect air hug and the perfume is a lot. And she says, Daddy, can I steal Callie away for a few minutes? And he gives her a nod, or he gives her tight white dress a nod. And he says, sure, honey. And she says, come on. It's so great to see you. This is such fun. Like we're on a play date. Or no, like she's Nancy Drew and we're exploring the old mill, which we are because she leads me upstairs and she says, when I first saw this room, I knew how much you'd love it. It's the Lincoln bedroom.
Her jaw drops.
Whoa. Whoa, it keeps getting worse or better, depending on your sense of humor. So she pats an armchair, and then she sits on the bed. And I think something is definitely up. She wants something. And so I sit down, and she cuts right to the chase, and she says...
She bites her lip.
Callie, I need you. Because I know that people hate me. And now be honest, but why do you think that is? I mean, jealousy, of course, but why else? And she's looking right at me, and she's this glowing blonde cloud. And I decide I can't do it. I can't just be polite because then I'm part of it. So I say, people hate you because you're not qualified, but your dad hires you to work in the White House. And she's nodding like, of course, of course. And what else? And so I say the racism, Charlottesville, putting kids in cages, the way your dad treats women and you defend him, the insults, the sneering, the lies. All my gay friends hate you because of Pence and the trans ban and trying to repeal gay marriage. And you post pictures of yourself hugging the evangelicals who say that gay people are going to hell.
She furrows her brow.
And she says, oh. But gay people know that I love them. I'm from New York. So I signal them quietly. Like, I tweeted congratulations to that new black lesbian mayor of Chicago. And I'm creating so many jobs. My dad says it's 15 million. And unemployment, especially for minorities, has been at its lowest levels ever. It's done. It's done. She thinks it's done. And so... she keeps going, and she gives me a huge, just between me and you, secret smile, and it's twinkling. And she says, but I need to turn things around on a perception level. I need people to see Ivanka, her brand, the third person. Then she says, so what if we became friends? I mean, real pals. What if I could come to New York and you could take me places? Because if I go to a show or an event by myself, or God forbid, with Kellyanne, everyone snubs me. One person even spit because they think I'm a traitor. But if I was with someone like you, someone with total social street cred, we could go to a restaurant or a gala and you could be my angel. My protector, my backstage pass, my human shield. And I think, why? Why does she think she can ask me this? Because we went to school together? Because we're both rich? I mean, who the hell does she think I am? And then I get it.
She nods.
Yep, Nina, you guessed it. Because her entire fucking life, she's never heard the word no. And then it happens. She unleashes it. The smile, the one she's been working on for decades. The miles of lip gloss, the hint of Vaseline on her teeth, the chin implant slightly lowered, the pageant-ready smoky eyeshadow, the full-on megawatt billboard, advertising nothing but greedy perfection. The product. Only this time it's not some failing golf resort in Scotland or... a diamond tennis bracelet on the Nordstrom website or a ghostwritten guide to empowering women. It's all her. Total Ivanka. Dream Ivanka. President Ivanka. And it's this blonde avalanche just pounding towards me and I'm paralyzed. I'm reeling and I flash on Abe Lincoln in the corner going, what the fuck is happening in my bedroom? And Ivanka says, I know it's overwhelming, but this could be so great. The two of us, a team, a power couple. And then she stands up and she says, I'll call you. And she's out the door. And Melania's hanging somewhere upside down and her dad is touching my dad's arm and he's saying, great talk. And then we leave. And so when we get in the air, I ask my dad what Trump wanted. And he says, money, a photo op, golf. You'd think he has everything he ever wanted, but he doesn't. He never will. And I say, so what does he still want? And he says, the thing he claims to hate. The thing he tells his Klan rallies he doesn't need. But all he really wants is New York. The New York Times, to stop wearing the MAGA hat, to be rich and powerful without being a joke. He wants something that he's just smart enough to recognize, but too clueless to achieve. He wants style and ease and to stand up without crumbs in his lap, like the coastal elites. Why do you think he's so obsessed with Obama? He wants us. And I can't believe I'm about to say this, but for a second, I almost feel sorry for Trump and Ivanka, for being so needy, for being all alone in the White House with only each other and the sort of people who would be there. And then today, I get a call an hour ago, and it's her. And she says, Callie, it's happening. We're opening the country back up. It's all about 2020, so let's get started. And I'm stunned. And I say, Ivanka, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, do you have any idea what's going on? And she says, but didn't you see what I tweeted the day it all started when people needed to hear from me? It was from the Bible. It went, this is what the Lord said. I have heard your prayers and seen your tears. I will heal you. Isn't that perfect? And do you know, when Trump had the National Guard clear those peaceful protesters with tear gas, just so he could walk to that church and hold up a Bible like it was his fucking phone, I read that walk, that whole thing, was Ivanka's idea. She had the Bible in her purse, in her $1,400 Max Mara bag. And did you see that her dad just said that he's done more for Black people than any president in U.S. history? Like he expects a fucking thank you note? And she keeps going. She says, so Callie, whatever you want, Women for Trump, Black Voices for Trump, Senior Advisor, I'll send the plane. And I am beyond. Because she really thinks this can happen. She really thinks that she can stand off to the side and sit in her little bubble where nothing can touch her. And she really thinks that she can social distance herself from history. And she thinks I'll help her. And I'm staring at my phone and I want to yell, fuck you. Just fuck you.
She shakes her head and rolls her eyes.
But instead, all of my boarding school training kicks in, just like hers. And I say...
She bites her lip.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I can't. Previous engagement. I hope you understand. And there's a pause, and she says, of course, Callie, all the best. I love you. And I've been sitting here shaking.
She gapes.
Because she scared the shit out of me.
She quickly pulls back her shoulders and sits up straight.
Because even here, Nina, all the way in New York, I can hear it. I can hear her smiling.
Text appears. Because I have to tell someone. May.
4 more years of President Biden.
A woman sits in front of a flowery meadow backdrop.
I know you're scared. We all are. We're sitting at home. There's a virus out there. The world is upside down.
Mindful Meditations with Clarissa.
So welcome. I'm Clarissa Montgomery, and we're streaming live episode 28 of my Mindful Meditations. I hope my words will soothe and enlighten you, or at least allow you to watch CNN without screaming at your partner. Have you seen this?
Clarissa gestures to her left.
Let's begin. I'd like you to close your eyes and envision a beautiful hillside, lush with wildflowers and overlooking a peaceful, undisturbed valley. You're like Julie Andrews singing The Sound of Music with her arms open wide and never dreaming she'd soon be trafficked by the Catholic Church into becoming an unpaid nanny under a Nazi regime and ultimately marrying an employer twice her age in a scenario that could more rightly be termed hashtag Edelweiss Me Too, hashtag none of my favorite things, and hashtag Sunyi Von Trapp.
She opens her eyes and puts her hands in her lap.
Let's return to our hillside. You're happy. You're at peace because you're not allowing political trauma to poison your bliss. Take a deep, healing breath and imagine that you're not even on Twitter or Facebook or Xanax. Are you starting to feel better? More centered? More sane?
She sits back and closes her eyes. Her background fades, changing from the meadow to a stream in a forest. She slowly raises her left hand.
We're floating. We're breathing. We're in a calm, neutral space. No one is angry. No one is sick.
She opens her eyes.
Okay,
She shakes her head.
This isn't...
She wags a finger.
Oh.
She stands.
This is so weird.
The background shuts off. Her chair sits in front of a green screen.
I'm sorry. I'm so, so sorry. But, I don't know if I can keep doing this.
She stands behind her chair, peering straight ahead.
No. Let me explain. Let me try to explain. I owe you that. Because this morning I saw something on the news, except it's not just that. It's everything that's been happening to all of us. It's... Okay. Hold on.
She sits. The forest background reappears.
Let me start from the beginning. When the virus first appeared, like all of you, I was frantic. I didn't know what was going on, so I decided to fly home to Wisconsin and isolate with my family. I know. But I'm a hopeful person, and I just wanted to see if it was possible, if just maybe we could use this terrible illness as some sort of gift, a time out to heal and bond. I know. But I love my family, and I just thought, what if...
The background changes to a bright meadow.
My folks still live in Lake Auburn, this tiny little town. It's like 8,000 people and change in the farmhouse where I grew up and where the Montgomerys have lived for 5 generations. I always love it when a couple on HGTV is renovating their craftsman-style home and they demand a farmhouse sink. We have to have a farmhouse sink because you know what we call that in Lake Auburn? A sink.
She smiles.
And as I'm driving through town, I notice something. No one is social distancing or wearing a mask. So maybe this is a refuge, a safe zone. How great, how potentially great. And I pull into our driveway, and there's a Trump sign on the lawn. But I tell myself, no, stop. Lower your knee-jerk liberal defense mechanism, because that sign isn't automatically hateful. It's not a Confederate flag, like last Christmas, on the tree. I go inside and I hug my parents and my 5 brothers and sisters, which feels so good, except almost all of them are wearing MAGA hats, even the dog. No, I tell myself, stop it. They're just hats, calm down, and I'm offered one. And it's on my head, And everyone is chanting, and my brother, Ned, reaches into my chest, and he pulls out my heart, and they eat it. No, stop it, Clarissa. Stop exaggerating. But I can't. There are tater tots.
She rubs her arm. The background changes to gently swaying ears of wheat.
So...
she shrugs.
I'm with my family, and I am trying so hard not to be a snob, because it's not a horror movie. Or Stephen King... And then my Uncle Dirk says, Trump's a real straight shooter, tells it like it is, and I'm drowning. I'm choking. I try to say something, but only random words come out. It's like I'm in The Exorcist. Charlottesville! Obamagate! Golf! And my mom grabs me and pulls me into the kitchen. She knows me, so she says, stop it, Clarissa. Right now, you're driving yourself crazy. We are so happy to see you, but I'm not sure what you're doing here. This whole corona, whatever the heck it is a hoax. It's just like that impeachment doohickey or that Russia whatchamadoozy or the idea that Melania speaks with a foreign accent. She's from Maine.
Clarissa gapes.
And I have no idea what to say to that. And she keeps going. She says, no one here is sick. Well, sure, your sister's on methadone and Randy lost a finger in that snowmobile accident. And your cousin Brittany has a little cough from working at the fulfillment center, but we're fine. And have you ever thought that maybe there is some kind of disease, but that it's all happening in New York and California, and maybe that's because all of you are so upset?
She shakes her head.
And maybe she's not crazy. Maybe she's not wrong. So I listen, and she says, think about it. You wanted an enemy, so you made one up. It's like with climate change. If it snows in New York, you commission a study, you write 58 op-ed pieces, and you blame it on us. If it snows out here, we put on a sweater.
She shrugs and shakes her head.
She's actually making sense, and I'm calming down, and she hands me a cup of tea, and she says, and we're not racist. That's nonsense. There aren't any black people here in Lake Auburn, so who would we be racist to?
She shakes her head.
She said that. And then she says, and please don't lecture me about pronouns, because I'll admit it, I don't understand all that transgender, non-binary, LGBTQ business, so I just call everyone dear. Done.
She throws up her hands.
Which is almost sweet, so I smile, and she takes my hand, and she says, and real soon, like tomorrow... this whole virus hoo-ha, it's all going to be over. Just like President Trump said, it's going to be like a miracle, and it's gone. Why can't you believe him? He's given us the best economy ever, and it's coming right back. I love you, sweetheart, but you need to have faith.
She leans forward.
And in that moment, I...
she shakes her head.
I want to believe her. I want it so badly, because she's my mom.
She nods.
And so I start really thinking about it. What if I met him? What would I say? Would I just sputter and scream? What if he listened?
She nods.
What if I listened? What if everyone in this country, what if we all just stopped being so angry and listened?
She sits back. The background changes to a dense canopy of green trees.
So I leave the kitchen, and I look around at my family, and they're all smiling. And I think...
she holds out her arms.
Maybe this is possible. Maybe this can work. And then my brother Travis says, Clarissa, you know what's wrong with you? You've got TDS. And I ask, what's that? And he says, Trump derangement syndrome. And they're all laughing. And it's like Rosemary's Baby if the Satanists all had corn dogs. And before I know it, I'm crying and I blurt out, I can't. I can't do this. I love you all so much and I don't want to hate you or argue with you or just grit my teeth and pass the gravy boat and say no. Actually, Canada doesn't have nuclear weapons. I can't act as if there are two sides to questions that don't have two sides. And Mom, I know you're going to say I'm choosing politics over family, and maybe I am, but I can't. I can't be here.
Clarissa rubs her thighs.
And my dad drives me to the airport. And when we pull up outside the terminal, he says, hold on. I have to tell you something. And this is the weirdest thing of all, because my dad, he doesn't talk. I mean, not ever. He's a contractor and a vet and a really good guy, but he's not chatty or huggy or... Okay, he's the sort of person who, if he's not interested, he shuts his eyes and falls asleep, sitting up. Except for right now. Because he's looking right at me to make sure I'm paying attention. And he says, I have to tell you something because I have to tell someone. And if you tell your mom or anyone else, I swear to God, I'll deny it till my dying day, and I'll kill you. But I'm not voting for him. Not this time, I can't, and it's not about the virus or collusion or whatever. And I say, Dad. And he says, John McCain.
She nods.
He flew 23 missions, and then he got shot down and held prisoner for 5.5 years. He was starved and beaten so badly that for the rest of his life, he couldn't raise his arms over his head. And Trump, he said, I like guys who weren't captured. And I have never seen my dad like this. It is pouring out of him. He said Trump kept insulting the man even after he died. Trump was making some goddamn appearance, grinning like a baboon. He was in front of a naval destroyer named the John McCain, but Trump had them cover up the name. And he stops because he's so furious or appalled. But I mean, I have never heard my dad say this many words in a row, but he holds up his hand because he's not finished yet. He says, I didn't always agree with McCain. Hell, I don't even know if I liked him, but the man was a hero. An American hero, and Trump's a rich boy, a 5-time draft dodger with bone spurs, and I don't even care about that. I care about McCain.
She holds her hand to her chest. She shakes her head.
So I hug him. And I get back on the plane, and I fly here to Vermont, and I think I'll just keep making my meditation videos to help people. Except I can't stop thinking about my dad. I can't stop thinking about everything.
She shakes her head. Text appears. President Miriam, April. A nurse talks to a webcam. She wears a mask under her chin.
I live in Wyoming, where we've been lucky. They needed nurses in New York. My best friend Kendra was volunteering. I was really scared. But Kendra said Wyoming is so boring, so here I am. It's just like everybody says. Even the New York doctors and nurses, they've never seen anything like it.
She shakes her head.
I just got off a 14-hour shift, and I know I should probably take off my clothes, put them in a plastic bag, take a shower. It's just all so surreal. Mostly because of this one patient. Miriam. I first met her like 3 weeks ago. I was working in the tent outside the hospital doing nasal swabs, and she's all dressed up. And she's got this amazing shawl and lipstick. And I said, I like your bracelet. And she says, oh, thanks, isn't it pretty? My son got it for me after I told him to. And I said, are you headed somewhere else? And she said, no, I just wanted to look nice for the doctors and nurses. I said, that's awesome. And then she says, I'm Jewish. And then I went, nozzle talk. And she says, you'll get there. She's smart and funny. After I stuck the swab all the way up her nose, she said, thank you and fuck you. We laughed. And her temperature was 99.8, so the doctor sends her home, tells her to monitor her symptoms. And she says, I know, my daughter's a neurologist in Seattle. And she turns to go, and then she turns back and says, single. And then she turns to go, and then she turns back and says, again. The next time I see her, I'm working the ER, and she's being admitted because she's up to 102 and coughing. Not terrible, but the doctor just wants to do a chest X-ray, and Miriam, she remembers me. And she says, you're from Wyoming, right? And I said, yeah. And she says, so you weren't kidding. And then I hand her a gown. And then she says, before this goes any further, I need to ask you something. Are you a Republican?
She smiles.
And I said, no. I guess I'm an independent. And then she just stares at me like Darth Vader and just says, oy. And I ask her what that means, and she just says, it means that if you say that any louder, everyone in the tri-state area will kill you. Her X-ray isn't good, but she's not showing any advanced symptoms, but the doctor just wants to find her a bed for observation and start her on this experimental protocol. And she says, you mean that hydro, whatever it is, that Trump bullshit? And I said, yes, Miriam. It says right here on the IV drip, 550 cc's of Trump bullshit every hour. And then she says, oh, it's just like Fox News. And then I said, yeah, well, maybe it'll start working. And she says, that's what his parents said about Jared.
She looks down and smiles.
She's tough.
She shakes her head.
She's tough. I told her, I said...
She leans against her hand.
I've never met anyone like you. And she says, what, you mean... You mean a strong, independent woman? And I said, no, with so much Kleenex in your purse.
She rubs her eye.
And then she starts coughing, and I guess I must have looked worried. And she says, well, let's hope it's cancer. We don't say shit like that in Wyoming.
She shakes her head.
And the days are just getting more and more insane. The halls are filled with patients on gurneys waiting for beds. We're all wearing more and more PPE when we can get it. And the whole hospital just looks like a cross between a space station and a subway. And we're all just trying to hold it together, because that's what they taught us in nursing school. Do the job, provide comfort.
She bites her lip.
Because if you start crying, you'll never stop. And one day we lose 8 people. The next day it's 18. 27.
She shakes her head.
And the only thing that's keeping me going is her.
She nods.
Miriam. Because she's stable, and I keep telling myself she's going to make it, because people are making it. And I take her vitals, and she's got this terrible look on her face, and I ask Miriam, what's wrong? And she points to the TV hanging up on the wall. And it's one of those White House press briefings, and the president's talking about how great everything is and what an amazing job he's doing, and Miriam's wheezing, and she says, I need Advil, the bedpan, and a gun. I just said, Miriam, we're turning this off, and she won't give me the remote. And then we both hear him talking about how we can maybe start injecting ourselves with disinfectant or bleach. And she says, what is he talking about? Is he talking about cleaning products? Is it a Jewish disease? And then she tells me, I need 800 milligrams of Lemon Pledge stat. And she starts coughing. And I said, Miriam, you just need to calm down. You can't watch him. And she says, don't you get it? My rage is the only thing that's keeping me alive.
She raises her eyebrows.
The doctor comes in, and we have a conversation out in the hall about putting Miriam on a ventilator, if we can even find one. And I ask him if, you know, maybe she's right. Maybe she just needs to keep talking. And then the next morning I get to the hospital and there's a refrigerated truck parked outside because there are so many bodies. And I get to Miriam's room and she's doing a little better. Her cough is intermittent, she's sipping Pedialyte, and she tells me, Sharon, last night I had a dream. And she says that I dreamed that when I woke up, everything was different. People were still sick, but everyone wasn't fighting or calling each other names or blaming everything on the Chinese or waving Confederate flags. And I said, in your dream, who was president? And she said, me. And then I just got so busy. Because we admitted 58 more COVID patients in one day. And I didn't have time to check in on Miriam.
She rubs her eye with her palm.
Because 4 nurses tested positive and were quarantined. I had one patient that was giving birth. And her husband wasn't allowed in the delivery room. And another patient was dying. And I had to hold the phone to his ear so that his family could tell him that they loved him.
She nods.
And the only thing that was getting me through it was her.
She shakes her head.
Like, Miriam's gonna make it. Because God wouldn't dare. And the next morning, she's even better. We don't need a ventilator. And I asked the doctor if she can be discharged, and he says, yes, this afternoon. And I tell myself, okay, this is what hope looks like. Later, just after 2, I get to Miriam's room with a wheelchair, and I'm picturing myself wheeling her out the front door into the fresh air. While everybody cheers. But she's gone. A stroke.
She shakes her head.
She couldn't breathe. They tried everything. I didn't even have enough time to call her daughter in Seattle, and she had a living will. But I wasn't there.
She stares down.
I'm not her child.
She wipes her cheek.
I'm not her family. But I wasn't there. Over the next few weeks, things got better. Fewer COVID patients. Less death. They shut down the Javits Center. And the Navy hospital ship left, and,
She nods.
Tomorrow I'm going home.
She removes her mask. She smiles.
I met Miriam's daughter, and she's so sweet.
She shakes her head.
She gave me Miriam's bracelet, a playbill, and a tote bag for Planned Parenthood. And she said if Miriam was a pharaoh, that's what would be in her pyramid. And I asked her what she thinks is going to be on her tombstone. And she thought about it. And then at exactly the same time, we both said, fuck you.
She shakes her head. She bites her lip.
I keep thinking about ways I can honor her and what would suit her. What would she want?
She bites her lip.
And I think I've figured it out. But I'm gonna keep it between Miriam and me. But I'll give you a hint.
She shakes her head.
I'm not voting independent.
Audio description created by Zoo Digital. Written by Olivia Habib and narrated by Joe McQuillan. Previous credits: Bette Midler, Caitlin Deaver, Dan Levy, Sarah Paulson, Issa Rae. A caricature of Miriam running with a MAGA hat. Casting by Bernard Telsey, CSA. Costume designer, Colleen Atwood. Edited by John Pohl. Production designer, Mark Ricker. A caricature of Mark as Fusion straddling a rocket. Director of photography, Jim Denault, ASC. Executive producers, Paul Rudnick, Jay Roach, Jeffrey Seller, Floaty Suarez, Michelle Graham, Scott Shaloff. A caricature of Callie with a grinning Ivanka. Written by Paul Rudnick, directed by Jay Roach. A caricature of Clarissa meditating. Additional credits appear. Post-production supervisor, Ted Picoult. Assistant editor, Jason Barnosky. Sound supervisor, Renee Tondelli. Re-recording mixer, Michael Babcock. A caricature of Sharon and Miriam taking a selfie. Production sound recordist, Matt Israel, Steve Morrow. Health safety compliance, Abigail Heitner. Danny Sanchez. Text appears. Copyright, Home Box Office Incorporated. All rights reserved. In black and white letters, Delirious Media. A pink line divides text. Seller Suarez, HBO, a presentation of Home Box Office.